we'll proceed to the fourth case, Sellers v. Zurich American Insurance. Mr. Armstrong.
May it please the Court and opposing counsel, Mr. Tufnell, my name is Tom Armstrong, and I'm here representing the appellant in this case, Audrey Sellers. This case is an accidental death benefit case arising under ERISA. The facts are not terribly complicated. Mr. Sellers worked for Time Warner Cable in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He was injured while performing training exercises at work. He tore the patellar tendon in his knee. This occurred in September 2005. He underwent surgery in late September 2005 to repair the knee. In the course of that procedure, the surgeon implanted a metal wire to assist in the healing process associated with his injury. Mr. Sellers' injury did heal properly. The wire that was inserted in his knee was no longer performing any therapeutic value by approximately the beginning of 2006. Medical literature indicates that if you leave a wire in long enough, you do have a potential for breakage. That is in the medical literature. That was never conveyed to Mr. Sellers, and there's no evidence in the record that it was.
I want to clarify that. You say it never was disclosed to him. Was there an assumption that this wire could stay in there in perpetuity? I thought that was always thought that it would be removed.
Well, what did occur, Your Honor, the record does reflect that at the pre-surgical conference, the surgeon informed Mr. Sellers that at some future date, the wire would be removed. There is no indication as to any potential for breakage in the wire, but obviously once the wire is no longer performing a therapeutic function, I guess it would be reasonable to remove the wire. But the record does not reflect that Mr. Sellers was ever informed about any potential breakage in that wire. In fact, Mrs. Sellers, who was at that pre-surgical conference, submitted an affidavit stating that wire breakage was never discussed with Mr. Sellers.
The removal would require some surgical process.
That is correct, Your Honor. Removal of the wire would require some surgical procedure. That is absolutely correct. The surgeon in April of 2006, her notes reflect the fact that she decided to allow the wire to remain in the knee unless some problem developed. Once again, there is no indication in the record that breakage of that wire was a potential. The wire did break sometime in May of 2006. Mr. Sellers went in, an X-ray was taken. The X-ray showed that the wire had fractured in three places. The surgeon then informed Mr. Sellers that because he was experiencing pain and stiffness and swelling in the knee from the wire breakage, and because of the potential for migration, that wire would have to be removed, or those pieces of wire. The surgery eventually took place in November of 2006. Unfortunately, shortly after the surgery, an embolism developed, and Mr. Sellers died from the pulmonary embolism about 9 days after surgery. This is an unusual case in the sense that both parties agree that Mr. Sellers' death was accidental. This is an accidental death policy. The Zurich, the appellee, denied the benefit claim on the ground that, yes, even though the death was accidental, the only accident, at least in Zurich's opinion, was the accident that initially occurred back in September of 2005 while Mr. Sellers was undergoing training exercises and the patellar tendon erupted or broke. The issue then becomes, at least in the insurer's mind, or the insurer says that the break in the wire is not an accident in its opinion, that the breakage of a medical device, which is expected, at least in the medical literature, to break, cannot constitute an accident. The response to that is, there are several responses. Number one, federal common law dictates the outcome of this case in terms of whether the breakage in the wire was an accident. The word accident is not defined in the Zurich policy. This court, as has every other court in ERISA cases, has made it clear that when there is no definition in an insurance policy, federal common law provides that definition. And federal common law dictates that whether a particular event is deemed to be an accident is to be viewed from the standpoint of the ordinary insured, an ordinary person, not a medical expert. So from the perspective of an ordinary person, and I think this court in Senkier reflected this standard, the question becomes, would an ordinary person view the breakage in the wire that occurred in May of 2006 as an accident? And the answer to that, we submit, is yes. There is another federal common law principle that has been applied by this court and every other court in ERISA cases, and that is, in determining whether the death is accidental under the policy, we don't look at whether the event that triggered the death is an accident. We look at whether one might expect serious injury or death as a consequence of what occurred. It's called the accidental result test. So we have to view this from the perspective of an ordinary insured. Would you regard the breakage of the wire as an accident? And secondly, even if you would one expect serious injury or death to flow from that particular event? It's much like someone driving on a tire. You know eventually tires wear out. And if you're riding on a tire that had a life expectancy of 50,000 miles and you're driving down the highway, and the tire has experienced 70,000 miles of wear, and the tire blows out, and someone is killed, I think most people would regard that death as accidental, even though one might say, well, you can expect the tire would blow out after 70,000 miles or rupture because it was beyond its useful life.
Mr. Armstrong, on the proof of death form submitted, wasn't the training accident the date of the accident, wasn't that stated as September 15, 2005?
The proof of death form, yes, Your Honor. The proof of death form was filled out by Mrs. Sellers, and she regarded the knee injury as the cause of death. And frankly, Zurich, in its initial denial of the claim, said, oh, no, that's too remote. We don't view that as the cause of death. Subsequently, Zurich came forward and said, oh, wait a minute, there's a 365-day provision in our policy, which is really the only issue, as they admit. Mr. Sellers sustained the accident in September of 2005. He died in November of 2006. That's 14 months, which is obviously more than 12 months. In response to that new assertion of the basis for denial, Your Honor, Mrs. Sellers, by her counsel, took the position, which I think is quite sound, that the break in the wire was a secondary accident to the initial accident.
Did the break in the wire cause the embolism? Or was it the surgical removal?
The surgical removal caused the embolism, Your Honor. That's correct. In other words, the break in the wire, had there been no embolism, the break in the wire would not have caused death. This court's decision in Senkier, which forms a part of this case, and I should say the district court, in its opinion, stated that that Zurich was reasonable in concluding that the break in the wire was not an accident because medical experts expect the wire to break at some point in time. We would submit, Your Honor, that that disregards federal common law, which, as I've stated, looks at the break from the viewpoint of the insured, not a medical expert or a medical textbook, number one, and also because the court said, I'm not sure what test to apply here. Maybe they're all no good, but what I will say is that this is a discretionary on the part of Zurich, and Zurich is not unreasonable in applying, even though it's contrary to common law, looking at this from the viewpoint of a medical expert, which we submit is incorrect, Your Honor. There is not a single court authority supporting the proposition that federal common law can be disregarded in a case where the insurer is accorded discretion in making benefit determinations. Now, in the response brief submitted by Zurich, we construe that brief, I think we can all read it. Zurich is taking the position that this court's decision in Senkier, rather than the district court's opinion, controls the outcome of this case. And that in Senkier, the court held that treatment of an injury or a mishap in the course of treating an injury does not constitute an independent basis for determining whether there's an accident. You have to look at the reason for treatment. And Zurich contends in this case that the break in the wire was a complication or a mishap in treatment. And we would submit, Your Honors, that's a false premise. Even if we look at the definition of complication right out of the dictionary says it's a secondary condition developing in the course of treatment. The treatment for Mr. Sellers had long since elapsed when this wire broke. Treatment had concluded in January. He was healed. There was no further treatment being accorded Mr. Sellers. The wire was performing no purpose whatsoever. His knee had healed. So this was not an injury or a complication or a mishap in the course of treatment.
This is, of course, a key issue here because it is, based on what I'm looking at here, it seems that maybe there's a misunderstanding, but this removal of the wire was anticipated because it was not going to be a permanent fixture and that at some point. Now, the doctor said, well, now it's broken, you know, we've got to remove it. But you're making an argument as if that wouldn't have to be removed unless it were broken.
Well, that's what the doctor decided. The doctor decided, I'm not going to remove this wire, I'm just going to leave it in.
That's undisputed.
Unless it, that is undisputed. The doctor had decided.
It's kind of a wire that historically or whatever doesn't break if left in?
Well, it, eventually, like everything else, I believe it will break, eventually.
Yeah, that's if it's already done, it's already cured what it's supposed to cure, then I guess they'll respond, but I want you to respond. Is that a natural consequence, an anticipated consequence of that wire having to be removed of the original operation?
I think it's anticipated that the wire would be removed, Your Honor, but there is no evidence that Mr. Sellers would have died had he had surgery to remove an intact wire. This wire had actually broken into five pieces by the time it was removed, and because of that, an arthroscopic procedure could not be performed. The surgeon had to go back in and rip through all the muscle and actually had to repeat the procedure. This was a very serious operation, given the fact that there were five pieces of metal. It could not be done arthroscopically. And it would be speculation to say that removal of the intact wire would have resulted in Mr. Sellers' death. That would be pure speculation. What we do know is removal of these five pieces of wire, that surgery, did result in an embolism, which occurs infrequently, but it's one of the risks of surgery. That did occur, but it occurred only because the wire broke in this case. He would not have had surgery in November of 2006 but for the breakage in the wire. There was no plan to remove that wire. The doctor had decided, and it's in her records, that not to remove that wire, to leave it in unless it began causing a problem. So removal of the intact wire, which may have been anticipated to occur at some time, never occurred in this case, and there's no evidence that removal of an intact wire would have resulted in the death of Mr. Sellers.
Go ahead. With regard to the policy, though, it unfortunately, they didn't operate sooner because they knew it was broken sooner and decided for whatever reason not to. That's all.
Well, so, Mr. Armstrong, it's your position that treatment ended, wasn't suspended, in the sense that there was no foreseeability that treatment would be necessary should the happenstance that did occur occur.
That's correct, Your Honor. Treatment for this injury had ended. The real issue in this case is the break in the wire, a second accident. Because if it is, there's no question that that break in the wire resulted in Mr. Sellers' death. And there's no issue in here of the mere fact that it caused an embolism. It didn't directly result. In terms of ERISA causation, it did result in Mr. Sellers' death. That break in the wire is the only reason that surgery occurred. Treatment had ended. There was no plan for additional treatment. So it's the break in the wire that triggered the surgery that caused Mr. Sellers' death. But for that breakage, there would have been no death. It must be presumed that if the wire had been removed intact, we cannot assume that Mr. Sellers would have died from a pulmonary embolism.
What if we had been faced with not only the breakage, well, let's put it aside, but misdiagnosis with regard to a medicine or something developed because of the conditions in the hospital, which occasionally occurred, that caused the death? But, of course, he's in the hospital.
Correct.
Would your position be the same?
Well, under Sankey, Your Honor, let's assume that the break did occur in the course of treatment. Senkier says that you've got to look back to the original cause for the treatment to determine whether there's coverage. It's undisputed that there's coverage in this case for the knee injury. Senkier does not answer the question, when does the 365-day period begin to run? This is a secondary accident to the initial accident. So if we're looking at the accident in toto, if you will, it includes not only the initial tendon tear, but also the injury that occurred when the wire broke. And so we can't isolate and say we're not going to look beyond September of 05. Everybody agrees, and Senkier holds, that a mishap in the course of medical treatment is an accident in the common vernacular. All Senkier says is you've got to look at the first accident or the cause for treatment to determine whether it's covered. Now, in Senkier, we had a disease. We had Crohn's disease. Crohn's disease was excluded by the policy. So you couldn't bootstrap your way into coverage because of a second accident, if you will. In this case, that's not true. In this case, we have... I see my red light's on. In this case, we have a covered accident, the tear of the patellar tendon. We then have a subsequent accident. Now, whether it's a continuation, which we submit it's not, or even if it is a continuation, we would submit that the time period begins to run from that point. Thank you.
Mr. Armstrong. Mr. Tufnell.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, John Tufnell for Zurich American in this case. Mr. Sellers did not die because the wire broke. The wire broke as of May 15. The medical records show that the wire had broken as of that date. But Mr. Sellers died over 6 months later because of complications as a result of removing the wire. He had a heart attack from a pulmonary embolism caused by a blood clot. The blood clot was caused presumably by immobilization following the surgery. But the wire didn't break or didn't need to come out because it had broken. The wire always had to come out. The medical records show that the wire is not supposed to be left in the body, whether broken or not. And in the appendix at the second page, in the preoperative notes that Mr. Armstrong referred to in his comments today, September 26, 2005, Dr. Schultz, 3 days before the initial surgery, noted that within 4 to 6 months, the wire had to be removed. And it wasn't just that she noted this in her records, but she explained that she was speaking with Mr. and Mrs. Sellers at this time, and she was explaining the procedure here that she was going to do 3 days later, which was to insert the wire into the knee in order to assist in the healing process for the torn patellar tendon.
Well, then, is it unequivocal, then, that this is a two-stage operation?
Unequivocal. The medical records at appendix page 2, pre-operation, it is unequivocal that this is a two-stage operation, and it's unequivocal that Mr. Sellers and Mr. Sellers understood that. They understood that the wire would be removed, and they understood that that would be a second surgical procedure. So if we're going to focus on what Mr. Sellers knew about the removal, we have that record pre-operation where he understands that this has to be, there is going to be a second surgery regardless of what happens. We also have a record in April of 2006, 6 months after the surgery, and before the wire broke, where Dr. Schultz is discussing again with Mr. Sellers surgical removal of the wire. Again, this is before the wire broke. But the wire was not removed at that time because, according to Dr. Schultz's medical notes, Mr. Sellers did not want to interrupt his therapy. That belies the notion that there was not this continuing treatment or continuing therapy. Mr. Sellers clearly was continuing his therapy, because in April, the wire hadn't even broken yet, and he was continuing his treatment with Dr. Schultz. Dr. Schultz noted that there was no localized pain from what would be a broken wire. So she's already looking, when she is treating Mr. Sellers post-operation, for possible signs of a broken wire. She's anticipating that that's going to happen because we are now 6 months out. She says in her notes, "Therefore, I would not consider hardware removal yet, until symptoms occur. She knows it's going to happen, and she knows it's going to happen soon. And, in fact, in the next medical visit, May 15, 2006, an X-ray is taken, and she finds that the wire has fragmented into three pieces. So how do we get here today with this focus on the wire breakage? Why is that such an emphasis in this case? And Mr. Armstrong pointed out that because that's the only possible incident that falls within the 365-day period that would capture coverage in this case. So if we look at the coverage clause, which states, if injury, which is defined as an accidental bodily injury, results in death, Zurich will pay what's shown on the schedule as long as death occurs within 365 days of the accident. So we have three elements: an accidental injury resulting in death within 365 days. So in order to meet that third element, they've got to find something within that time period. The initial knee injury in September of 2005 doesn't work. We know objectively death occurred 14 months after that date. So he's got to find something in between, something within 365 days of the date of death, if he wants coverage in this case. There's only a couple other plausible events that could satisfy that condition. We have the wire breakage, where we don't even know when it occurred, but we know it occurred as of May 15, 2006. We have a surgical procedure, November 16, 2006, to remove the wire, and that was the anticipated surgery, even back preoperative. Or we have the date of death, November 25th. And Mrs. Sellers isn't pursuing either the date of death or the date of the second surgery as incidents or accidents that would trigger coverage. So they're left with one. There's only one plausible date, one plausible event that could satisfy coverage in this case, and that's why this emphasis on the broken wire is being made by Mrs. Sellers.
Is there anything in the record that would show, maybe you know, if the wire had been intact and removed, would that have been a less invasive operation? If you don't know,
There is nothing in the record that suggests that the operation itself was made more difficult by the fragmented wire. There's certainly nothing in Dr. Schultz's records that led her to have any sense of urgency with the fact that the wire had frayed or broken. In fact, if you read her records, back May 15, 2006, and again, with the emphasis being on the broken wire, which Ms. Sellers claims resulted in Mr. Sellers' death, as she must to recover under this policy, you would expect a flurry of medical activity following the discovery that this wire broke, if that was truly a significant injury in this case. Yet, if you read the May 15, 2006 notes, it's almost an aside that the wire is broken. She notes it in discussing the X-ray.
I didn't hear you, Mr. Stelfman.
It's almost an aside in the medical notes of May 15 that this wire has broken. After noting the break, Dr. Schultz writes, his patellar tendon repair is doing quite nicely. She notes that the wire is serving no practical purpose and explained the overall nature of the removal, which would involve a second surgery. That's all consistent with what she said preoperative back in September of 2005. She noted that it would be an outpatient procedure. Dr. Schultz noted that all of his questions were answered and that he will consider scheduling for hardware removal. So Dr. Schultz and Mr. Sellers, knowing that this wire has broken, they're leaving it up to Mr. Sellers. There's absolutely no urgency about surgery. Mr. Sellers will consider scheduling it when he wants to. There's no imminent bodily harm, save some aggravation and some swelling. Mr. Sellers was kept on medium duty work. 1 month later, Mr. Sellers is back continuing his treatment with Dr. Sellers. And the June 19, 2006 note shows that Mr. Sellers is doing all activities at work. He's back climbing ladders. He even says in the medical records he's not even thinking of his knee. This is with the wire that's broken in his knee, and everybody knows it. Dr. Schultz notes that on occasion some stabbing pain from the broken hardware exists, and she says, as one would expect. He's got three fragments in his knee from a broken wire. He's going to have some stabbing pain every once in a while. She noted mild swelling, and she put him back to work with no limitations. This is in June 2006, a month after this wire frayed. Again, there's no medical urgency to get this taken care of.
Mr. Tubman, you speak of when it broke. That's what you're, to be accurate, it's when it's discovered, right? We don't know when it broke.
We don't know when it broke. We know it broke as of May 15, 2006.
That's a discovery date. That's not the date that it broke.
That's right.
I mean, it could be. I'm not excluding it, but it's, to be accurate, it's just a discovery date.
No, it's probably most accurate to say it happened prior to that date, between April 3, 2006 and May 15, 2006, because those are the goalposts we have on our medical records. It happened in between those two dates. Dr. Schultz notes in June of 2006 that Mr. Sellers knows he will need to schedule surgery for removal of hardware, and he will do so at a time that is convenient to him. So again, it's up to Mr. Sellers' convenience that they're going to get this wire out. He will call to schedule hardware removal in the future. Okay. The next medical note is 6 months later, almost 6 months later, November 6, 2006. The entire summer has gone by. Mr. Sellers is at work with no restrictions, and he's got this frayed wire in his knee. And they're finally going to schedule surgery. And as part of that discussion, Dr. Schultz said blood clots is a possible complication of what we do here. It's a surgical procedure. That's one of the complications.
You said something earlier about the, I guess, either designated or how they determined that the embolism was actually caused because of immobility or something like that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that because you didn't get up and walk around or something? I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, following the surgical procedure, he was required to be off the leg and had to be elevated. And during that time period, there actually are a couple of medical records in which he was coming in for some physical therapy, but the clotting occurred. If it was due to immobilization, that's typically what happens. But in Mr. Sellers' case, a blood clot formed and resulted in a pulmonary embolism, resulting in a heart attack, and resulting in death.
Okay.
One of the issues in the case is this expectations, and if we look at expectations, I think the expectation here is whether that second surgery was going to have to occur, and everybody knew it was going to occur. There's nothing in the record that suggests that the broken wire made the second surgery any more complicated. Certainly the medical evidence shows that there was no urgency once that was discovered. That's not the type of event that would usually be considered by a common person or any other person to be an accident, because there's no urgency to get it taken care of. Zurich, with discretion in this case, is entitled to exercise that discretion without regard to being confined by any common law rule. The authority we cited in the brief, the Hess versus Reg Allen machine case, discusses that point, that if there's ambiguity, discretion is supposed to take care of that, and the ERISA administrator is not bound by any particular rule of law. However, that decision may be viewed in the terms of whether it's a reasonable decision in the context of a common law decision. So I think that that point is in Zurich's favor in terms of the discretionary review of this ERISA case. If there are no further questions, I'll say
probably not. Thank you, Mr. Tufnell. Mr. Armstrong, I think your time has expired, but you may have 1 minute.
Well, Your Honor, there was a question as to when the wire broke. I think on page 9 of our brief, Dr. Schultz stated on April 3rd, 2006, that he was not having any localized pain from what would be a broken wire. So I think we can certainly infer that the wire was not broken in April of 2006. Briefly on Hess, Hess concerns ambiguity. The court has held in this case that the term accident is not ambiguous. Hess has no relevance whatsoever. With respect to the complicated nature of the repair, I would refer the court to page 11 of our brief. As of, this was during the surgical procedure, a small 1 to 2 centimeter incision was made over the area, and this portion of the wire was removed. This is a very small incision. However, instead of the 3 fragments that had been noted at the time of the X-ray, there were now 5. Since they're all very separate and small incisions would be, need to be made throughout the knee, it was felt that the regular incision would be best. Therefore, almost the entire portion of his previous incision was opened, sharp dissection being carried down through the skin, subcutaneous tissue, and scar tissue. This was a much more involved procedure because of the breakage of the wire. And finally, Your Honors, just on the common law issue here, this court and every other court has adopted the accidental result test. It doesn't really matter whether surgery at some point in time might be deemed necessary. The fact is the only reason surgery occurred here was the break in the wire, and no one, including the surgeon, would have reasonably expected death to result from this procedure. So under the applicable accidental result test, we would submit that the case should be reversed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. Thank you, Mr. Tufnell. The case is taken under advisement.